Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is December 5th, 2013. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm back in Hickory Valley after a great drive from San Francisco cross country, stops in Fresno, Burbank, Los Angeles, Palm Springs, Texas, and in the Ozarks. There's a lot percolating in this country. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday. It's always great to stop, take some time, and give thanks. We have much to be thankful for. Up on the left-hand side of the blog is a notice of our Gift of Solari, Give the Gift of Solari. That's for subscribers. Any of you who'd like to give a complimentary two-month subscription to people in your network, please let us know at customer service. It's all described there. If you click on Give the Gift, it's our way of helping you stretch your Christmas budget a little bit farther and to say thanks to you. Also up is our Christmas card. Our graphic this year from Lazzardi Communications is Santa going to the stars, inspired by our conversations about the breakaway civilization and also announcements of our 2013 donations. Check them out. First to the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in Wisconsin for helping veterans learn farming. Another to a wonderful preschool education for kids in East Palo Alto, the Creative Montessori Learning Center. And finally, Open Source Ecology for its Micro House Build program. Check those out. We'll be putting blog posts up about them as well. We love the holidays. Every week this month, we'll be having Christmas music that will be choices from the whole Solari team. So watch for some great picks for every Friday. We put it up on the top of the blog on Friday. Our theme tonight is it's nuts and bolts time. That's because it's year end. It's the time when we all think about taxes and how our portfolio did and our New Year's resolutions and what the budgets and strategic plans will be, whether it's for ourselves or our business or practice. And so I asked Patty Kemmerer, who is a wonderful CPA who I've worked with for many years. She's a member of Kemmerer Schooley Smith CPAs, to join me for a review of U.S. taxes. Now, while you still have something to do, you can do something about it before the end of the year. Patty did a great job of describing the key issues. U.S. taxes just keep getting more complex. I hope you find that conversation as useful as I did. This year's nuts and bolts is particularly a challenging time for many organizations. We'll talk in money and markets about the stories going of what's going on this week, but what you're seeing are enormous signs of deflation as we have both global slowdown and enormous changes in the economy because of technology and globalization. And what you're seeing is powers fighting more and more intensely over dwindling cash flows in those sectors that are shrinking. Nowhere is the nuts and bolts more painful than in the world of precious metals and commodities. Deutsche Bank announced today that it's shutting its commodities trading operations, a perfect example of how bad those markets have become. For the gold bugs, it's been a gut-wrenching year. Gold, which I started buying at about $300 to $400, went up to $1,900 in 2011 in October and is now back down to about $1,225. I had told clients I'd wanted to move principal out at 1850 and was hoping to do so in December 2011. We never made it, and so it's been a painful ride for all of us. I've done two commentaries on precious metals recently, one up on the blog this week, heads up on precious metals, and then last week, what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals? And between those two commentaries, essentially what I said is, my line in the sand is 1200. I divide precious metals holdings between what's called a core position, which is that amount of coins you have to bribe the border guards with. It's for the worst case. It's insurance. It's not price sensitive. And then your investment position. And what I've said is, 1200 is my line in the sand. I would give serious consideration to going down to your core. If you haven't already, if we break through 1200, Mining stocks are in the worst of the throes of nuts and bolts time, because a lot of companies are going to have to shut down or shut down operations. So, and that's going to be very tough for the areas of the world and the countries that depend on those operations. Money and markets. The financial markets have everyone scratching their head. Everyone looks bad, except for the developed world equities. Bonds down, commodities down, emerging market equities down in most cases. Cash, of course, giving you no yield, enough to spark debates about should we have negative interest rates. I think it's a very bad idea. It's hard at this point to put funds in U.S. equities, which until the last few days were at all-time highs. Again, they've been down the last few days. Insider selling is quite high, but the equity flows continue in. We've seen almost $43 billion flow into equity funds over the last 2 months. It's enough to prompt Yale professor Robert Shiller, who coined the Shiller PE, to be concerned about a possible bubble and say he was, quote, most worried about the U.S. stock market. The most interesting discussion this week, I think, was in finance in Washington about the minimum wage. And I believe it was inspired by poor sales over Thanksgiving and Black Friday. I wrote a commentary called Cluster F, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. We don't use swear words on the Salieri Report or the blog, but it's Cluster F Finances. And what I talk about is the notion of mandating a higher income to those people whose income is low, because it has essentially been stolen or destroyed by the very people who are now proposing to mandate a higher income. If you look at median household income in the United States, it's been on a downward trend since 2000, while essential household expenses have been rising. The squeeze is one we've talked about many times here on the Salieri Report. It's what I call the slow burn. And there are literally thousands of reasons for lower income, many of them related to policies of the government, including the enormous strain for the last 50 years that the black budget has put on American households. It's a combination of both the pump and dumps of the housing markets, of narcotics trafficking and other organized crime in neighborhoods, on and on and on. We certainly talked about it. And then, of course, $4 trillion missing from the U.S. government. If you have any doubt about sort of the intentionality of this, I would encourage you to watch Sir James Goldsmith's video that I've talked about so many times on the Salieri Report, and then of course my online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. A lot of commentators will tell you that this dynamic is as a result of technology. I believe that's completely rubbish. If you look at how technology should work, it should be decentralizing. If government spending regulations and enforcement had actually functioned within the boundaries of the Constitution, I would have expected both the technological wealth coming out of the black budget as well as the technological innovation more broadly would have benefited smaller players vis-a-vis larger players. So I just don't buy that story. Now, it's funny because the corporations are facing a conundrum. Let me quote from Bloomberg. Quote, the number of people on payrolls in the U.S. is still 1.5 million below the number in 2008, even after a five-year rally that has boosted the value of stocks by $14 trillion, 167% advance of the S&P 500 index during the past 57 months has been driven by reduced costs and record low borrowing costs boosting corporate profits, analysts say. Employee compensation relative to net corporate profit is at its lowest level since 1966. So essentially, we've built corporate profits by firing people. Now that the people aren't showing up to buy from retailers on Black Friday, suddenly, whoops, the president thinks we need a higher minimum wage. And of course, my comment in our commentary is, I wonder if the president will soon propose that the increased wage be mandated to go to the preferred corporate retailers. This is the problem of a centralized economy run in the Soviet method. I finally end the commentary with this paragraph. It would appear that the regulatory targeting and destruction of small farm and small business income in the heartland of America is so profitable that the lobbyists and lawyers of the capital city can afford to buy Organic, that's because the latest copy of Men's Health notes that the city of Washington is one of the highest in the country in terms of organic sales. Anyway, check out that commentary on the blog. There's this minimum wage discussion is going to get fierce. There was a headline today that we saw fast food workers picketing and lobbying for higher minimum wages. Robotics are coming, and one of the realities is the more you increase the minimum wage, the more the robots are going to go in. The fast food industry is probably in for a pretty significant revolution in terms of robotics between now and the end of the decade. Another interesting commentary, I called it Roaring Centralization, and I show Lockheed Martin, Google, and Facebook stock up against the S&P 500 Treasury bonds and gold. And what you see is any corporation that's doing a good job of tightening up the central control has had a gangbuster year for the most part. Another face of the roaring centralization is the continuing war on state and local pension funds. This week, the city of Detroit, which had filed for Chapter 9 bankruptcy, received the latest opinion from the bankruptcy courts Michigan courts related to the bankruptcy filings. They ruled, in fact, that Detroit can proceed with its bankruptcy filing, which means that both unsecured creditors and pension funds are going to get rolled back, and that the Michigan Constitution protections for pension funds will not hold. Somebody wrote me today, one of the radio show hosts that I work with, and said, what does this mean? And what it means is that three decades of the lack of leadership, cooperation, and innovation, you know, across the board on all sides resulted in the obvious, which is if you have no assets, then it doesn't matter what promises you've been made or what laws are. The law is irrelevant if the assets have been disappeared, drained, or stolen. And it's a complicated story of many different things. Expect Detroit to be a prototype for radical reengineering. It's underway, and it looks like retirees are going to get pennies on the dollars. This is not a good omen for state and local pension funds and municipalities across the country. I suspect this kind of engineering to gather steam. Watch out for what's going to happen in Puerto Rico. That story is going to be much worse, and there's certainly pain ahead. So let's go through the stories on the blog. There is, as I said, a tremendous amount happening as sort of nuts and bolts time comes with year end. The Ukraine pulling out of the Euro deal is a story of great importance. It's another example of Putin's determination to return Russia to a position of power, using as much leverage as he can where he can. One of his problems is the introduction of fracking technology to Europe. Russia's position as a supplier of oil and gas is critical to its strategic position. So this really represents a deep squabble between Putin and the G7. A report this week that opium production in Afghanistan is at an all-time high is not surprising, given the squabbling back and forth between Russia and the United States. A lot of that opium is targeted into Russia. It's a profitable way to weaken and destroy your competition, as I'm sure the way the powers that be see it. The face-off between China, Japan, U.S. In the East China Sea continues. We have several pieces up on the blog about that, and we'll continue to follow it. Expect China to keep flexing its muscles. It's just launched its first aircraft carrier this week. Interestingly enough, the renminbi passed the euro in terms of global trade finance, taking a market share of 8.66%, up from only 1.89% at the beginning of the year. That's extraordinary. The euro was the second largest at the beginning of the year, was 7.87. They're down in October to 6.64%. The U.S. dollar continues to enjoy a massive market share, 81%, but it's slipping. It's down to 81% is down from 84% in January. China, as we described in the blog, has halted its IPO halt. So expect Chinese IPOs to move forward. The reform effort in China is going to be very interesting to watch if the world can ever believe that Chinese accounting and securities regulation is trustworthy as their market capitalization continues to grow. There is going to, you know, it continue to be an extraordinary increase in the amount of money flowing into those equity markets. I did a little search this week as I watched the sort of growth of what's happening in China to check how many people speak English versus Mandarin. When you have as many native speakers as they do in China, you have a great competitive advantage. Wikipedia shows a dispute because the claim is that 1.8 million people, including everyone who speaks English as a second language, that totals to 1.8, which would put it ahead of Mandarin, which is now at about 1.1 native speakers and a very negligible amount in secondary speakers. But it'll be interesting to see as the growth of the Chinese economy continues what the competition is going to be for the most spoken language around the world. That's an incredibly important aspect to the fundamental economic warfare going on. Despite the face-off East China Sea, there are still hopes for cooperation. The Wall Street Journal reports that China Mobile and Apple have finally agreed to a deal to make iPhone available to China Mobile's 700 million users. So that's going to be good for Apple if it's the case. And the Bitcoin brouhaha continues in China with China banning banks from trading Bitcoins. I want to stress again, I keep getting emails from subscribers, a very strong recommendation to only put money in Bitcoin or any of these currencies that you're prepared to lose 100%. This is a highly speculative investment. It certainly does not contribute to freedom. Anybody who says that doesn't understand what's really going on. Please assume in the worst case that there is absolutely no anonymity. So if you're trying to do things in and around tax or other authorities with Bitcoin, I just think it's suicide. The Volcker Rule implementation is coming. It's going to have an impact on proprietary trading. It's going to be interesting to see. We're going to be following it. Something really big is up in oil and gas. We had Al Gore yapping several weeks ago about how technology is going to replace fossil fuels, or renewable technologies are going to replace fossil fuels, and stock market capitalization in fossil fuels is at real risk. It was clearly the beginning of a campaign, and sure enough, what we're beginning to see is a push for colleges to have their endowments disinvest in fossil fuel companies. An article from the Washington Post up on the blog about the fossil fuel divestment movement. I'm curious to see who and what is really behind it. Things like this don't happen by an accident. So there's a real campaign going on, and it's part of what we'll be discussing next week with Jim Norman when we talk about the oil card. There's a hearing scheduled this month for the new head of the IRS. I had written a commentary about that in August. Expect when that position is filled for the targeting of the tax havens to go ahead. We have coming in a player who's typically someone Mr. Global sends in when he wants a very tough job to get done. I think I called the commentary, make way for the killers, or make way for the financial cleaners. So here it comes. Science and technology. The stories this month in science and technology are extraordinary. We have Jeff Bezos, CEO of Amazon, announcing last weekend that they're putting together a system for drones to deliver from their warehouses within a 10-mile radius. Now, this can't roll out until the commercial ban on drones ends in 2015, but expect this to be something that made the decision by Amazon to do large CIA contracts and by the Washington Post a very strategic decision. The combination of what Amazon is up to is starting to take it from being what looked to be a fairly friendly organization to something not very friendly at all. 23andMe was a genetic testing services started by the wife of one of the founders of Google. I used to describe it as terrifying. Sure enough, Scientific America is now describing it as terrifying, and the FDA has come down hard on it. Good for the FDA. Science Goes Wrong is a commentary from The Economist that's up. It's off the homepage now, but it's worth reading. A description of how much science, in fact, behind many different things upon which policymakers are depending turns out to be very wrong. It's a little chilling. And finally, a post on asteroid mining. We have major money in Silicon Valley and around the world coming together to build the capacity, the private capacity, to do mining using robotics. It almost makes you wonder if there is not a connection between what they know and what is happening to the mining stocks. So check it out. There's a lot up on the blog this week because there's a lot going on. Our hero this week is a young man named Ty Linger. He's a Christian rancher from Montana who created an organization called Heifers for South Dakota. It's kind of a cattle aid for farmers who've lost livestock in one of the worst storms ever to hit South Dakota. It's a very touching story. Our runner-up is Barbara Walters, who was overruled by the corporate headquarters when she pushed hard to have Snowden, Edward Snowden, voted the or nominated the most fascinating personality of 2013. I'm with Barbara. Good for her. It took a lot of chutzpah to push that. And finally, while we're in the hero category, I wanted to, of course, mention that it was announced today that Nelson Mandela has died at the age of 95. Ask Catherine. I wanted to start Ask Catherine with not a question we got this week, but an apology for one of my answers in recent weeks. I keep defending Bill Moyers, and I want to apologize for that, because if you look at his coverage of the Kennedy assassination, it was not only absent, but he did an interview where he interviewed a scholar about all that had gone wrong with our politics and groaning about our culture without ever addressing why or how. And to be silent on the Kennedy assassination and literally talk about the symptoms that result when those kinds of things go on and the media brings no transparency to them, it was not his best moment. A couple of comments on the Vatican Embassy. Somebody sent me a note about our coverage, my conversation with Joseph Farrell about the latest doings at the Vatican, and asked, is it possible that Francis is being coerced? I wrote back and I said, it's possible. I was just reviewing the announcements by the U.S. as to why it is now moving its embassy to the Holy See outside of Vatican City. Looks to me like arguably the world's greatest money laundering mechanism is being disassembled. Impossible to tell what's going on, just seems very important. They wrote back, agree. The move sends an extraordinary political message. Coercion could mean major league disagreement. As you have intimated, how it turns out is anyone's guess. We do indeed live in very interesting times. That is the case. I suspect the reason that the U.S. is pulling its embassy back behind the walls in Rome is that whatever the Vatican is up to, it is putting the, sort of the NSA operations within that embassy and whatever is going on in terms of, money movements behind the protection of diplomatic immunity. That's a whole mechanism that they can't afford transparency on. So it looks to me like the ducking of transparency. Another question, I got this question from my sister and wondered if we might cover it on the Solari report. And the question is, in reading about the potential threat of forced purchases of government bonds in pension funds, do you think that means all company 401ks and personal IRA accounts across the board, or would it strictly be company 401k plans? There's been some recent articles on the fear of basically sort of targeted investment by 401ks that have been very sort of choppy and misleading. I'd be careful. We put up a week ago a link to the latest CBO proposals for balancing the budget, 100 plus ideas. I would strongly recommend, if you want to see what's in the wind, you check that out. The goal on 401ks and IRAs is to increase the total funds available. If anything, the political push right now is to get more funds going into equities than bonds. You know, you keep seeing this proposal floating around to get Social Security set up so that you can basically invest the money in the stock market. I'm not as worried at this point about forced purchases of treasuries as opposed to equity. I'm much more worried about mandating that small business has to do 401ks and that essentially bankrupting small business by forcing them to set aside an even greater percentage of their profits to finance large corporations. If they do such a thing, I can't tell you how important it is that small businesses organize and start to do community venture funds and other things that allow small business capital within a community to be reinvested, or at least a portion be reinvested in the businesses and equity opportunities in those communities. Another question, you mentioned earlier this week that if the price of gold goes below $1,200 an ounce, that you recommend selling everything except core holdings. What do you believe now represents better alternatives than gold in today's economy? Everybody has to make up their own mind on this topic, but I can tell you what I'm doing personally. I have always believed that people are a better investment than gold, and if you look at my personal investments, they generally track that. First and foremost, I help a lot of people out. I make a lot of donations off and on throughout the years. In my own business, I try and flow a lot of money to independent individuals who do things from making cartoons to helping us with our website or advising me on technology. So I would much rather create jobs by building my own business, or I invest occasionally in other private businesses. And then finally, great companies. If you look at what I've been doing personally, as I identify, and I'm very much a great leadership and great management team, where I see great management and leadership aligned with what I consider to be the long-term trends, I consider those to be very good opportunities. If and when gold bottoms, I expect it's going to go back to the category of being a very good investment. And there are times in the market when stepping aside and sitting in cash for a period of time while things shake out is not a bad idea. It's one of the things that I did a lot of, or advised a lot, in 2008, and it turned out to be a very good strategy. We called it the big chicken, and sometimes it can hurt to be a chicken. Finally, what is the relationship between the powers that be and the mainstream media? Do the powers that be control all the major stories that get released or buried within the media? Essentially, yes, but there's still a fair amount that percolates out. And what we now see is tremendous factionalism with different factions using transparency through the major media to squabble. As the alternative media has grown up, the major media is being forced to win back market share, and you'll see a variety of us in the major media, in the internet media, do things and have it picked up. I can't tell you how much the Solari report gets picked up and taken. We often have market research firms sign up, and they sign up and listen, and shortly thereafter, you're hearing literally sometimes even the same sentence and paragraph coming out of the mouth of somebody on the major media. It's always fascinating to watch. A question about CPAs. Patty and I had recommended that you have a CPA do your taxes. And somebody who's a sophisticated financial professional wrote in and said, well, I'm doing my own. Should I think about changing? Somebody who's a pretty knowledgeable financial professional is probably the exception to the rule. But even in that case, you might want a CPA. If you're doing 99% of the work, you ought to be able to get it low cost. But I would say that it's an added layer of protection. the rules are getting so complicated and enforcement is getting very, very troublesome. So I think it makes it, if you have a qualified CPA who is checking everything you're putting in, I think it's another layer of protection. I think it's extremely important to be picky and careful and make sure you're finding somebody who's extremely ethical. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to revisit a favorite, which we've mentioned on the Salieri Report in Let's Go to the Movies before, and that's The Name of the Rose. Sean Connery plays a traveling monk, and in this wonderful mystery taking place during the events of the Inquisition. And it's a movie that really highlights what happens to enterprises who go about hoarding knowledge and the fights and sort of powers that be, squabbles that can erupt in the face of that. I love the movie for many reasons. One is sometimes I do feel a little bit like Sean Connery traveling from place to place, trying to seek out the civilized in a world that's becoming increasingly uncivilized. And so when I travel, sometimes I'll think of different scenes from The Name of the Rose, but given the events of what's happening with the Vatican's move to greater transparency, I think it's a very appropriate movie to watch, because if you look at who's sitting on probably the richest archives and library and secret knowledge in the world, it's certainly the Vatican. So the idea of the Vatican moving to greater transparency could certainly disturb more than a few people. So check it out. It's a wonderful movie if you haven't seen it. Okay, that's it for this week. In closing, coming up next week, we have Jim Norman back with the Oil Card, one of my favorite guests. And there's so much going on in the world of energy, both fossil fuels and renewables, and of course, the discussion about breakthrough energy. So I'm really looking forward to that. Make sure to get your questions in. We already have several questions for Jim that I didn't address today. We'll hold off and wait until he's back. And then part of Nuts and Bolts time and coming clean, December 19th, Dr. Laura Thompson is going to join me to talk about winter wellness. What are the things you can do now to make sure you're strong, you don't come down with those flus, and what to do if you do. And then finally, December 26th, we'll have John Rappaport on the report the day after Christmas. So until next week with Jim Norman, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.